600 UTC.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, June 14, 2023. A Sudanese activist says the world is not paying attention to the humanitarian crisis in Khartoum and Darfur.
And they are experiencing difficulties, untold humanitarian circumstances, but worse humanitarian circumstances.
And the deputy governor of Unity State says the cleaning of River Nam will be done at the end of June.
The engineers have managed to put on the surface of water three equipped machines with large excavators that will be now be using in the cleaning process of Nam River.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Fighting has continued uninterrupted in the Sudanese capital Khartoum and Al Jineina in West Darfur state since the expiration of a 24-hour ceasefire over the weekend. Saleh Mahmoud, a human rights lawyer and president of the Darfur Bar Association, told Nabil Biagio from the Sudanese town of Wad Medeni, where thousands of people are fleeing, that the situation in Khartoum is desperate.
Heavy fighting started immediately after the end of the ceasefire agreement. And now another point people don't see is that there's influx of people fleeing Khartoum, going to either outside Sudan, to Egypt, maybe to Port Sudan, for other destinations, to Ethiopia. And they are experiencing difficulties, untold humanitarian circumstances, but worse humanitarian circumstances. People are not talking also about the reflection of this situation of Khartoum into other parts of Sudan, especially Darfur, is witnessing killings and violations. It is genocide. It's even worse than it was in 2003 and 2004. It is something that is happening in darkness. There is no at all any media allowed to go there to talk about the situation there. People are dying. Zalingi, Al-Jineina, Al-Fashir, Kutum, Nayara, to some extent, are under the siege of this warring party. And then people are not talking about the displaced who are not at all being addressed either by the international or the regional institutions, humanitarian institutions, to talk about their basic needs, while the local authorities of the government are denying them the rights of the basic needs, and even the right to stay. For example, here in Madeni or Gabar, sometimes they are telling them to go away, and they are not allowed to assemble or to settle themselves anywhere, because the authorities are targeting them, driving them even further from Khartoum and Madeni, for example. And this is dangerous, because children, elderly people, there are instances of suicide due to this inhumanitarian circumstances here.
The conflict is now in Sudan is almost 2 months old. There's a mediation process that's been going on for weeks in the Saudi city of Jeddah. For what do you think of the mediation process so far and what it has produced?
Many people inside Sudan, some political parties and civil society organizations, welcomed very much the efforts of the mediators in Jeddah, especially the USA administration and Saudi Arabia Kingdom. Earlier, when it was about the necessity to stop the fighting in Khartoum between the warring parties, that objective was very much welcomed. Unfortunately, ceasefire agreement were not at all respected by the warring parties. And it is unfortunate that the mediators in Jeddah were never showed or talk about necessity of the presence of monitors on the ground to monitor the commitment of the two parties, warring parties, to what they have signed as an agreement to stop the fighting.
That's Saleh Mahmoud, prominent Sudanese human rights lawyer and president of the Darfur Bar Association. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from Wad Medeni, some 85 miles southeast of the capital, Khartoum. The United Nations expects close to 1 million people to flee Sudan by October, most of them to neighboring countries like Central African Republic, Chad, Egypt, Ethiopia, and South Sudan. Most of those nations have their own problems with people displaced by conflict who face food insecurity and instability. Henry Wilkins reports from Borota, Chad, on what Sudanese refugees will face in their host communities.
16-year-old Saeed Adam Mohammed says one morning in May he rode his bike down to this patch of ground on the outskirts of Borota, a Chadian town about 5 kilometres from the Sudan border. As he rode past the makeshift shelters, he could see the people were in need of help. He says people escaped and came to Chad, but there is no food or drinking water, no clothing. The refugees lost all of their belongings. Some 425,000 refugees have now fled to neighbouring countries because of Sudan's civil war. But many of their host countries face their own conflicts and are struggling to feed their own people amid skyrocketing food prices and inflation. Experts and aid groups say Sudanese refugees face far from certain futures in host countries, including the Central African Republic, South Sudan, Ethiopia, Eritrea, and Egypt. The mayor of Borota, Toko Bahat, says the community has done what it can to welcome the refugees. He says the people in Borota are from a mix of places like Konga and Porto, so they know one another. He adds they are like siblings since they come from the same families and tribes, so there is no problem in them living together. Similarly, in South Sudan, many of those fleeing Sudan are South Sudanese returnees. However, two-thirds of South Sudan's population already faces food insecurity and instability in Renk, where many refugees have arrived. Gemma Snowden is a spokesperson for the UN's World Food Programme in South Sudan.
The difference with South Sudan compared to perhaps Chad or Egypt is that the majority of people who are coming across the border returnees. Communities are quite welcoming, and of course we hope that continues. The pressure that this is putting on markets, on the humanitarian response, is definitely going to be difficult for humanitarian agencies and the government.
Most Sudanese refugees, more than 170,000, have fled to Egypt in recent weeks. Egypt's currency has been devalued by 50% against the dollar in the last year, while food prices have risen by 60%. The Central African Republic, where around 14,000 refugees have arrived, has been embroiled in a civil war for more than 10 years, and security is dire. Ethiopia, where thousands of refugees have fled, is recovering from a civil war that ended in November. Eritrea has been accused of forcibly turning away refugees attempting to flee Sudan's fighting. On a visit to Egypt in late May, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees commended Egypt for helping Sudan's refugees, but said, "We urgently need to mobilise more resources to help them to maintain this generosity." Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Borota.
Still on refugee issues, the UN Refugee Agency reports the number of people who have been forcibly displaced by war, persecution, human rights abuses, and climate change reached an all-time high of 108.4 million last year, and the number has jumped in the first 6 months of this year. Lisa Schlein is in Geneva, where the UNHCR released its flagship annual report, Global Trends in Forced Displacement 2022.
Last year's record number of forcibly displaced people has been smashed by new figures showing that the fighting in Sudan has pushed the current global total to a staggering 110 million. The UNHCR reported Wednesday the sharp rise in the number of people forced to flee their homes was driven by the war in Ukraine, revised estimates for Afghan refugees, and the outbreak of new conflicts, especially in Sudan. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi says the growing number of forcibly displaced is being met with greater hostility toward refugees around the world.
We see pushbacks, we see tougher and tougher immigration or refugee admission rules. We see in many countries a criminalization of immigrants and refugees, blaming them for everything that has happened and so forth.
The report finds refugees, people who cross an international border for security reasons, account for 35.3 million of the forcibly displaced. Most of the others are people displaced inside their home countries by conflict and violence. Grandi says, despite perceptions to the contrary, most displaced people around the world are hosted in low and middle-income countries.
I think the prevailing rhetoric is still that all the refugees go to the rich countries. This is actually wrong. It's quite the opposite. 70% of the refugees, meaning of those 35 million, actually flee to the country next to their country. Most of them actually want to go back home.
The report finds 52% of refugees and other people in need of international protection come from just three countries, Syria, Ukraine, and Afghanistan. With 3.6 million refugees, Turkey remains the largest refugee hosting country in the world. The Global Trends report says countries in sub-Saharan Africa host one in five of all refugees globally. The largest number, 4.7 million, were hosted in East Africa, the Horn of Africa, and the Great Lakes region. The Sudan conflict, which began in April, already has displaced close to 2 million people, with many of them crossing into neighboring nations. The report says 6 million refugees and internally displaced people returned to their countries and areas of origin in 2022. It notes the United States last year became the largest recipient of new individual asylum claims in the world, followed by Germany, Costa Rica, Spain, and Mexico. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese politician disappears in Juba. Find out how after the break. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some civil society activists in South Sudan are expressing concern over the alleged detention of Jacob Thorn, the Secretary General of the African People's Congress Party, who was allegedly picked from a hotel in Juba on Sunday by officers believed to be working for the National Security Service. Dengai Deng has details for VOA from Juba.
Jacob Thorn, who serves as the Secretary General of the African People's Congress Party, was lured by an identified woman with a Kenyan name who contacted him via a messaging application asking to meet the politician at the Rainbow Hotel in Juba on Sunday, according to Mangar Malo, Thorn's uncle. Malo says Thorn went to the hotel but was picked by members of the South Sudan National Security Service operatives who detained him.
This lady takes Thorn and say you come at 10:30. So before 10:30, Thorn showed me the chat and I went through them. I advised Thorn not to go because I checked the account and the account is anonymous. I told him you cannot go because I did not actually get the content of this account. The first one is even touching him if he's being asked about the WhatsApp number and all this. After going out for some while, Thorn went to that particular place. So in a few minutes, I was trying to call him and the phone was not reachable. So I took Border Personnel and went to Rainbow Hotel. and was not able to find him again. The number was not reachable.
An eyewitness who requested anonymity for fear of reprisals from the national security operatives says he saw Thorn being forced into a vehicle owned by the National Security Service. Malau says he reported his nephew's disappearance at Tongping Police Station.
Police advised me that since the location is known, there is no need for you to go for security purposes again. You go to that particular institution. So this is where now Thorn was confirmed in the morning to be in Blue House. A person can be arrested, but a person should be arrested with charges. You can also go and bring the warrant of arrest, inform the person and inform the relative that this person has committed a particular crime. So none of this thing happened. Was just illegally detained.
William Dengbil is the chairman of the African People's Congress Party. Dengbil condemned what he termed an illegal detention of his colleague by the National Security Service officers.
Yesterday evening, that's when someone confirmed to me that he's in Blue House. And he gave us some shocking details that Comrade Thorn was tortured and then, as usual, sexually harassed.
VOA could not independently verify the allegations of sexual harassment at detention centers of the National Security Service. Dengbil says South Sudanese leaders should instruct security operatives to respect the law.
I call upon, you know, the president, President Sampakir Mayardi, to start taming, you know, his boys in the National Security Service.
Bol Deng Bol, an activist with Jonglei State Civil Society Network, describes Thorn's detention as unfortunate.
This is not the first time it is happening. It has happened to other opposition figures in the country, even those who are in the unity government. Some county commissioners, some MPs, and the rest have been, sort of assaulted. Others are just locked up, in a custody, arbitrarily.
Major General Daniel Justin is the spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service. He says his office has no knowledge of Thorn's detention.
Unless I find out from the state press, because in our daily report there is nothing of that type.
John Kumuri is the spokesperson of the South Sudan's National Security Service. He told VOA that he will speak once he gets back to his office.
Alas, I'm just out of Juba, but in 30 minutes, in 30 minutes, I'll be in the office, then I'll confirm this.
But after 30 minutes, Kumuri did not respond to several calls and texts for comment on the story. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Florida, where former President Donald Trump appeared before a federal magistrate in Miami on Tuesday to plead not guilty to charges that he allegedly retained dozens of classified national security documents after he left the White House and obstructed government efforts to retrieve them. Trump became the first former U.S. president to face federal indictment when a grand jury in Miami last week indicted him on 37 counts in connection with his alleged mishandling of classified documents. A senior official in South Sudan's Unity State says Egyptian engineers are assembling equipment in preparation for clearing River Nam, a branch of the River Nile. The deputy governor of Unity State says South Sudanese and Egyptian officials are expected to launch the exercise before the end of June. Let Nyak Jok reports from Bantu.
Unity State Deputy Governor To Tungwar Kwegong said Egyptian engineers have assembled four excavators for a clearing plan and a passenger boat for transportation in advance of the cleaning exercise.
The engineers have managed to put on the surface of water three equipped machines with large excavators that will be now be using in the cleaning process of Nam River. So our belief is that when these Nam River is cleared from the reeds, from the blockage of the flowing of the water, then this may reduce flooding.
The Egyptian government donated several equipment in Tuutu for cleaning River Nam. However, the exercise lay due to argument by some government officials, civil society activists, and academia who recommended a scientific and environmental assessment to determine the impact of exercise on the ecosystem. Some lawmakers and residents in the United States say the cleaning of River Nam should continue to control flood in the area. A resident of Brooklyn County in the United States, Ward Lewis, said he believed cleaning of River Nam could prevent flooding in the area.
The situation is very worse as the cost of living. People are defending their light in the rate of humanitarians. There's no an additional food. Even the food that has been given by the government and also the humanitarian is not enough for the population who are in the United States.
Another resident, Marsa Nyaduochul, say the cleaning of River Nam is a long overdue, adding that he believes the exercise could solve the problem affecting some community in the area.
If the river is clear, the government should think about what they will do for us. Whatever we want, we will have an opportunity to come. It will enable the government to do everything for us. If the clearing is finished and the water reduced, it will be good for the people to go back to where they came from.
The Deputy Governor Tu Tungwar said the first phase of the clearing exercise will start from Yuanyang to Lake Nor. He said the second phase will start from Bentiu to Mayom County and the Paragazal region. For BOA News, Lian Nyaja reporting from Bentiu, United States.
Today is the World Blood Donor Day, and the director of South Sudan's National Blood Bank says the facility has run out of blood. Gregory Wani says there are only 5 liters of blood available at the facility, which is not enough for the population of Juba town. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
55-year-old Lokolong Lukwam sits at the entrance of the orthopedic ward at Juba Teaching Hospital as he waits for a good Samaritan to save the life of his son, who needs blood for an operation on his fractured thigh bone.
His leg is broken and I have brought him here. I'm told to look for a person that can help donate blood to my son. Last time, my blood was taken, but it needs more. I was told that there is no blood here in the hospital. Right now, I'm just waiting as doctors keep on saying, not yet, not yet, not yet.
In speaking at an event to mark World Blood Donor Day in Juba earlier today, Gregory Wani, the acting director general of the National Blood Bank, said South Sudan's blood bank is dry because of constant opposition to blood donation by some South Sudanese.
We are in heavy hearts, because we have not achieved our target. The target to provide blood for the needy. In other words, blood transfusion service is an act of emergency. If so, then we need to store blood in our blood banks. But for our situation, that is a nightmare.
Wani says patients with injuries during accidents, pregnant women, and children need blood at several health facilities in South Sudan. He added that currently the blood bank has 5 liters, which can only be enough for 5 people in Juba town. He says the majority of South Sudanese are not aware about the importance of donating blood. Angelo Atim, who resides in Juba town, says he has never donated blood.
You see me now, I'm very thin because maybe my blood are not enough to give blood to anyone. And some people think for it also, a weak person cannot give the blood.
South Sudan's National Minister of Health, Yolanda Awilding, who spoke at an event marking the World Blood Donor Day in Juba earlier today, says donating blood is an act of national patriotism.
I'm calling upon South Sudan to take the ownership of blood donation in our country.
because it has to come from a personal space. Nobody's going to force you, but it is a part of patriotic act. If you really love South Sudan, let us try to stand up and let us try to protect our nation from all aspects.
The National Minister of Health says the country should embark on creating awareness of blood donation. The theme for this year's World Blood Donor Day is Give Blood, Share Life, and Share Often. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Still on World Blood Donor Day, blood banks in Cameroon are usually close to empty due to widely held taboo against blood donations. Officials in the Central African country are trying to convince people to move past those taboos amid increased demand for blood. For VOA News, Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the capital, Yaoundé.
A woman tells nurses at the Yaoundé Military Hospital that he has not found anyone to donate blood to save the life of her two-year-old son. Hospital workers say the 34-year-old fruit seller's blood is infected and cannot be transfused to her son. Medical staff members have requested blood from government hospitals to save the child's life. The hospital says, adding that the blood bank at the military hospital is empty. Celestine Ayangma is the head of the laboratory that is in charge of the hospital's blood bank. Ayangma says since January 2023, the Yaoundé Military Hospital is able to provide only 6 of the 20 units of blood it needs every day. Ayangma says patients eventually die when they do not have relatives, friends or well-wishers to donate the blood that the patients need. By midday on Tuesday, the baby was still waiting for blood. Cameroon's Public Health Ministry reports that in 2022, hospitals in the Central African state were able to collect a little more than 120,000 pints of blood from voluntary donors, family members, and friends of sick patients. But each year, Cameroon needs at least 600,000 pints of blood for both private and government-owned hospitals. The government says blood needs in Cameroon are increasing due to the separatist conflicts in the country's western regions and fighting with Boko Haram militants on the northern border with Nigeria. This year, government officials, health workers, and aid agencies took to the streets ahead of World Blood Donor Day on June 14, trying to convince people to donate blood and save lives. Ruth Abeng of the Cameroon Medical Council, an association of Cameroonian doctors, is taking part in the campaign. She says there are very few voluntary blood donors in Cameroon. Abeng says some people are compelled to donate blood only when they see their sick relatives and friends who are in need of blood dying. She says it is disheartening to see patients dying because some of their relatives believe that blood donation is mystical. Some Cameroonians believe that if they give blood, the recipients will receive any good luck and success they have had in life. Others say God will punish them if they donate blood to an evil person. The government says such beliefs are unfounded and people should not be afraid to donate blood. The Ministry of Health also says donated blood is not sold as some people erroneously believe. Blood that is donated is stored in banks and transfused to people in need, the government says.
That report by Moki Edwin Kinzika brings us to the end of this show for this Wednesday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bob, we thank you for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.